Welcome back to Perfect Takes. I'm your host, Stephen Patton, joined as always by my co-host and dear friend, Jake LaQuire. And the Panthers are finally back in kind of like a mainstream sort of way. We're the talk of the town. We just upset the best team in the NFC. There's a lot of juices flowing. And I think what's interesting is kind of the catalyst I would point towards is there was a podcast I had never heard of, first off, before Barstool's made him famous. But they retired because of how bad the Panthers were losing to start the season. That they called it off. They said we are putting the podcast on a hiatus pretty much indefinitely. And this Meow Mix podcast has gotten this national recognition for retiring. The team is 4-1 since they retired. And they said they were going to come back this week. And after a lot of former Carolina Panthers and current Panthers players said, sit down, Meow Mix will not be returning. But Jacob, I know we're Perfect Takes. This is Meow Mix. Like, again, I've never heard of them prior to all this Barstools drama, but they started back in 2019. And you know me, I blame David Tepper for the issues that have transpired since he purchased the team in 2018 until now. But if we're being honest, this is the best team start this far into the season since 2018. So it seems like the bad luck is Meow Mix. And I'm glad that we could separate the wheat from the chaff.
I don't know if I'm going to go that far, I guess. But David Tepper is absolved. All your hatred toward him has been misguided, I guess. You have to owe him an apology the next time you're at the stadium. But I think that's a good intro.
No apology yet, but I do agree with absolved. But I think he's absolved of a lot of the past years and the wrongdoings.
Like, he hired people like Matt Rhule, but I don't think it was his first hire, right? It was going to take a couple times before he got it right. And then Matt Rhule and Scott Fitterer kind of put us in the hole. We're climbing out of the hole. And as you can see, we are 5-4. We are above 500. That stat since the Meow Mix pod retired or went on hiatus, Panthers are 4-1 since then. The one loss, Andy Dalton start. So as far as I'm concerned, we're 4-0. That was as soon as Andy Dalton was named the starter, automatic loss. So I'll take it. This is a crazy team so far. Through 9 games, the Panthers were favored in exactly 0 of them, including games like against the Falcons at home, against the Dolphins at home, and we have a winning record. We're the only team ever to do that since the merger to be the underdog in all 9 of the first 9 games and have a winning record. Really, I think we could have won more, but to focus on the Packers game, both of us thought that we didn't have a chance. Your take last week, Perfect Take last week, was that Green Bay wins by 20, and mine was that Green Bay scored 30. Well, neither of those things happened. Obviously, we won that game on a game-winning field goal, and neither team scored 30. Neither team scored 20. It was a 16-13 contest that I think we kind of gritted out. I think what Dave Canales wanted to happen happened. The time of possession, we didn't win that battle, but it was very, very close. It was like 29:50 to 30 minutes and 10 seconds. So it was a close game there, and our defense played solid for the most part. There were some issues, like on fourth downs, given a lot of cushion, but they forced a lot of mistakes from Jordan Love. So I want to get your take on the game. I thought it went according to plan as far as David Canales and the coaching staff wanted it to go. How did you think the game went? Obviously, we got the win, so I'm happy, but what were some of your more broad takeaways?
I didn't envision the grudge match. I would have assumed both teams, even in a close contest, would have scored like closer to 20 points. There would have been a little bit more like scoring. And obviously the Packers kind of fizzled out in the red zone a few times, and credit is Yuro Evero and their game plan on defense and being able to take away what Jordan Love does best. And then you go on the opposite side of the ball. And I think what Canales maximized was a lot of what we've been criticizing him to start the year. And that's game management. That's some of this usage of timeouts or just little edges you can gain throughout the game. And it started with the coin toss. Greg Olsen kind of pointed it out as the game went on, but he put himself in a position where when you're down and have a position to go win the game, that you have the win to your back. And that helped Ryan Fitzgerald hit the game winning field goal. So again, credit for just, again, thinking about that at the beginning of the game to give yourself an edge in that situation, and then limiting the number of possessions. Obviously, you said on air last week, like, the big caveat of us pulling off an upset of this caliber would be winning time of possession. I think limiting possessions would be just as impactful. And so obviously we don't win time of possession. It's about 50-50 split, but there's only seven possessions apiece. A lot of times teams are having 8 to 10 drives in a game. And so when you can limit that and limit how frequently the Packers are on the field, and then when they are on the field, you cause a fumble, you get an interception from Jordan Love when he threw in the triple coverage, you get a turnover on downs, which should have been an interception with Mike Jackson, and those kind of things, along with another missed field goal, gives your team the ability to pull off a game like this. So just, it was a very fundamentally sound game. And it's been very rare to say that we've won on the fundamentals during the Canales era. So when we talk about this being a statement win, I think it is exactly that, because it shows that we were able to win on all three phases.
Only team to win in Lambeau this season, by the way. And I mean, they've only played 8 games so far, but still an impressive feat. It was their throwback game where they wore those. Now that the game's happened, those jerseys were dreadful. Even watching it, it looked like a very watered down Notre Dame. I like Notre Dame's jerseys. I think the gold and the navy really meshes well. The brown and the navy, I thought, just didn't look good whatsoever. And it was limiting possessions, yes, but it was a bend don't break defense as well. I think we only forced one punt, and that was at the end of the game. The other possessions, they got into the red zone, they got near the 20, and they fizzled out. There was a missed field goal on their part, a fumble recovery, the Jordan Love turnover on downs, which should have been, I don't know if it would have been a pick six, but Mike Jack's getting to at least the 50 if he catches that one. So really stout defensive effort in the red zone. Defense played well. The offense, I don't think it was ever going to be a pass-heavy game, given some of the high winds, gale force winds, whatever you want to call them. I think Bryce delivered when he needed to. The red zone interception, you can't have that. But also when you rewatch it, I don't want to blame the wind, but like it, the ball flutters in the air for a second there. So if you don't throw a tight spiral in an area like that with swirling winds, it's going to get picked up. But when he needed to on that final drive, he made plays on the bum ankle, we should add. But Rico Dowdle was the star of this game. Another 100-plus yard performance as a starter. Excellent game, final possession, or for the game-winning drive. He had a nice 19-yard run, which set up the field goal. There's just not many complaints for me in this game. And then we haven't even mentioned the offensive line, which was patchwork going into the game. Who was it that wasn't starting? Cade Mays didn't start. Taylor Moten didn't start. That was like a surprise injury. And then Damian Lewis on the third snap left the game. So we had a lot of practice squad, a lot of backup guys in there. Micah Parsons, zero pressures. And not just against Ikem Ekwonu, who shut him down, against everybody. So a patchwork offensive line in the pass protection and in run blocking, excellent performance. So like you said, every phase, the Panthers, I wouldn't say we won. We kind of dominated every phase. Special teams, hit or miss with a missed extra point. But this was a very thorough win, probably the most complete win that the Panthers have had. And it came on the road in Lambeau. So there's a lot to like about this and a lot of hope going forward for the rest of the season.
The fact that the offensive line stepped up the way they did, especially when you saw the one offensive lineman go out early in the game, and again, it causes some reshuffling. It was just one of those moments where it's like, oh, is this where Devontae Wyatt, Micah Parsons, like some of these guys like pick it up and wreck the game? And they didn't impact it that way because they stepped up, like you said, not only pass protection, but run blocking. And this was a really great game from them. Bryce Young, he came up great on that final drive. I mean, moving up in the pocket to find Jalen Coker. And then obviously some of the misdirection stuff with communication with Rico Dowdle before he took the handoff and put the team in field goal range. But going to that interception and dunk on demand or unnecessary bluntness, I think bluntness on Twitter, he's a big Panthers fan, but he's kind of discussed how Bryce Young kind of throws the ball and the way it kind of hangs in the air and it not being as tight of a spiral allows in kind of windier environments like Lambeau, that the ball can kind of get carried, and he doesn't have the strongest arm. So the fact that Xavier Leggett kind of got moved off his spot, it was a little bit windy. And then Xavier McKinney, I mean, he's a really good safety. So the fact that he made a play on that, it doesn't surprise me. But I think in those situations, you just got to have a better play in mind instead of trying to throw kind of, it comes down to almost being like a fade ball. And I get Xavier Leggett's your big possession wide receiver that you want to get in those matchups. But I think there are probably more favorable play designs they could have leaned on in a situation like that. But Rico Dowdle, star of the show, 130 rushing yards on 25 carries. He added another 11 yards on two receptions, had two rushing touchdowns, and unfortunately got flagged for simply using two pumps. It's like, what have we come to as a society? It's one thing after another. You can't have your cake and eat it too, apparently. Rico Dowdle, the old homage to the Key and Peele skit where he does two hip thrusts, but didn't do the third, which typically incurs the personal foul. Instead, he got the personal foul after the two, and then that's what led to the miss by Ryan Fitzgerald, which caused the tie game to allow Bryce Young to go put together another game-winning drive. So any other thoughts on the offensive side, defensive performance, some of the plays that they made? I know we didn't really talk about the injury to Tucker Kraft or maybe Jordan Love, some of his bozo plays, but it's just nice that have a statement win like this. So I'm here to harp on the opponent, but I think the more that we can keep them on a pedestal, it makes the win seem better. So I'm good with going either way.
Yeah. The extra point following the penalty was the exact same distance as the game winning field goal. The difference was in the second quarter, we were kicking against the wind. And in the fourth quarter, we were kicking with a tailwind. And that goes to what you were talking about. Dave Canales won the toss and he received. And at the time, I'm like, we're receiving the ball? What are we doing? Because Dave Canales loves to defer to the second half, like most coaches do. But then when Greg Olsen was explaining it prior to the game-winning drive about, hey, when you receive the ball, you get to choose which direction to kick into in the second half. Then it started to click. It's like, oh, if we come down to a game-winning drive, this might be huge. And that's exactly what happened. Comes down, Ryan Fitzgerald redeems himself. Just really, it wasn't masterful because it didn't blow the team out. But for a good team like the Packers, who across the board are more talented, right? I think going into this, we would say better coach, still probably better coach. Matt LaFleur is a good coach. And to walk away with the domination that I think we put forth, I don't know. I'm feeling very happy about that one. The score doesn't reflect domination, but with such a talent deficit, leading the game, we were down 3-0, then we were up 7-3, 7-6, 13-6. Like they eventually would come back, but we were in the driver's seat for the majority of that game. And I never would have imagined that that was the case. If anything, I thought like, oh, we'd get a late field goal upset. But nope, we were in control.
So obviously limiting possessions, getting the turnovers, those all helped. But I think what really was the turning point watching the game, because typically, and we've seen it this year from the Packers. I mean, they've shown it the past several weeks. You look at the Cardinals, the Steelers games, slow starts, aren't able to get out of their own way in the first and second quarter. And it's like in the second half, they're able to spam Tucker Kraft and run the ball with Josh Jacobs. And that they get in the end zone and they run up the score and they get the dub and they walk out of there. And Tucker Kraft getting injured, I think, really impacted their ability to just have a guy that could go get you a bucket. They don't have another wide receiver of his caliber. And so I think that completely changed the numbers. It completely changed, I think, Jordan Love's comfort level. And we saw that. We saw a lot more mistakes on his part. And I'm curious if this offense is going to be able to get out of its own way or if they're just going to kind of stagnate without Tucker Kraft in the lineup. So a lot of people have said that Nick Skorton, what he did was dirty. It's really not. Like, that's how you, like, when you're filling the run, like, that's how you spill it. And it's just you're taking on the pulling blocker. And if you look at the size difference, typically when guys go lower, it's a smaller guy getting lower on a bigger guy, because just basic physics, if you're at the same angle, that bigger guy is going to push you over. And so this is just a common football play. It's how guys are coached. Luke Musgrave does it to Trayvon Wallace literally in the same game, and Trayvon Wallace just bounces off and makes a play and tackles Josh Jacobs. So it's not a dirty hit, and anybody that thinks it is, it's unfortunate if you think that way, because it's anything but.
I understand people looking for excuses when you're like disappointed and sad like that. Number one, that you lose, and then that a player of that caliber. I think he was playing at the high. I think he was the best tight end prior to going down from his play. Like Kittle hadn't played, Brock Bowers hadn't played, but it's a tough loss for them. The Packers, we're recording on Tuesday here, and the trade deadline just passed a couple minutes ago. The Packers didn't trade for a tight end or anything to replace Tucker Kraft, so it's going to have to be Luke Musgrave, or they have a guy named Fitzpatrick, one of their tight ends. So going to have to be one of those guys going forward. But overall, really good game from the Panthers. And I would love to see that continued going forward. And this week, it's going to be a special game in particular. Perfect Takes will be at the stadium for this one. So it's going to be a fun game. But the New Orleans Saints, the division rival. We are division rivals. I don't care what anybody else in the NFC South says. We're all rivals. Like,
do you think our rivalry, and I still don't think I pronounced that right on that last one, is bigger with the Saints or the Falcons?
I dislike the Saints way more, and it's because I had to watch Drew Brees my entire life, and he's just been good for them pretty much my entire football watching life up until the point he retired. So I dislike the Saints way more. Falcons fans are way more annoying, though, is what I would say. And our record with the Saints is much closer than it is with the Falcons, unfortunately. So I would say in spirit, the Falcons are probably the bigger rival, but realistically, it's probably the Saints. The Buccaneers, they're getting closer over the past close to a decade or so, but they are real bad, like between 2005 and 2020, really. So I don't really know about that one. But the Saints, I smile every time they lose. And that's something that the Saints have done, I want to be sure, eight times so far this year, eight times. That's right. They are 1-8, currently in position to draft the number one overall pick. And that could be a quarterback, but they took a quarterback in this past draft, Tyler Shuck, who had his first start this past weekend against the Rams, I think, didn't look very good. What are your thoughts on Tyler Shuck, and how should the Panthers prepare for a guy that there's no tape on? Like, that's a factor here.
I think the bigger thing for their passing attack this week is actually like losing a guy like Rashid Shaheed that had speed that could kind of force like our safeties to make sure they're backwards, and you have guys out of the box, and you have some number advantage for a guy like Alvin Kamara coming out of the backfield to give your young quarterback, and I shouldn't say young, I think he's older than what, Bryce Young, right? Am I right in saying that?
He's about as old as us, maybe a year younger.
Yeah. So, and that's where I was like, he's a pretty old dude, but your rookie quarterback. And so to help him out, that doesn't seem like that's in his best interest. I understand like in the future, this probably makes a lot of sense. So like in the short interim, that doesn't seem to equate, but he seemed to do a good job against the Rams defensive line at not taking any sacks. He took one sack all game. And that to me surprised me, because the Saints offensive line isn't necessarily this great wall of or immovable force. So with that being said, I was impressed by that. I will be intrigued to see if Averro throws some interesting coverage looks and tries to disguise things in a way that catches the rookie off guard. And that's something that I would be more inclined to see on Sunday. And I'd love nothing more to see in person several interceptions on the rookie. Do I think we're going to see that? I don't know, because again, Kellen Moore could lean more into the run game and take the ball out of his young quarterback's hands. But I'm curious what you think the Saints should do from an offensive perspective to attack us, because I think at this point, our defensive line matches up well with their offensive line. With Shaheed out, you could pretty much have J.C. Horn shadow Chris Olave, and everybody else would get shut down. And so at that point, it's just, where do you attack our defense if you're Kellen Moore?
I think you got to throw the ball. This is not the Panthers' run defense of 2024, right? We're competent outside of two key blemishes on the season so far. And so I think that you have to attack the passing game. Weirdly, one thing that you and I talked about last week was how Tucker Kraft should be a huge factor. Prior to him going out, I think he had two receptions for like 20 yards. So even when he was on the field and healthy, Jordan Love just wasn't targeting him. It was Romeo Dubs. It was downfield stuff to Christian Watson. One of those was like a huge interception. So I think they got to get Juwan Johnson involved, the tight end who was teammates with Tyler Shuck back at Oregon in 2019. That was like Shuck's third year in college. He threw a touchdown to him last week, which is cool, you know, a cool reunion. But I think that's where you got to attack if you're the Saints. And for the Panthers, just keep doing what you're doing, right? No Rashid Shaheed, who kind of torched us in that game one last year. That's a huge factor. So now they're going to rely on Chris Olave. Brandon Cooks is going to be probably your second option. And Devon Vele, another old, young, not rookie, second-year receiver now that they traded for before the start of the season. So I think you have to pass. I don't think the run game's going to be there for the Saints. I'd be shocked if we saw Kamara get all the carries. I think they're going to try to sprinkle Devin Neal, the rookie running back from Kansas, in there. But I'm not super concerned about the Saints. I know they're 1-8, but this is a division game. Record doesn't matter. I think we do match up well with them on defense. On offense, you got to keep pounding the rock with Rico. And I know Bryce hasn't had a lot of high-volume games this year. I'd love to see some more passing touchdowns sprinkled in, because I feel like if you can get more reps of T-Mac in the end zone, he'll come down with a lot of the contested catches or jump balls like he should be doing with his frame. If you can get Coker more involved, who's just coming back, he only has like two or three catches since being healthy and returning to the lineup, I think that would be huge for the passing game going forward. So as much as I think Rico Dowdle's going to have a good game, I'd actually like to see us pass maybe more than we need to, just to get the receivers some more volume for some of the tougher games later in the season.
I definitely think getting touchdowns through the air is viable. You just saw Puka Nacua and Devontae Adams do it against them last week. And to roll into this week, I think having a guy like T-Mac, a guy like Jalen Coker, we know who XL is in the red zone. Having those kind of targets, is JT Sanders officially back? It looked like he was playing a few reps this past week, but
he is. But they've been using Mitchell Evans a lot more, the rookie tight end, and he already has two touchdown catches this year. So you never know.
And so that's a guy you get down in the red zone. But again, when Rico Dowdle is eating the way he is, sometimes you just got to keep feeding him. And so I think in some of those instances, I think we were on the goal line this past week against the Packers because of a penalty that got us there. So it's just like you take away an opportunity like that because you have someone you can feed in that situation. So that's the only thing. I think I'll be mindful of that. But absolutely, I think that's something where if Bryce Young can just put touch on the ball and allow his wide receiver to kind of run underneath some of these passes, there's opportunities against this Saints defense to score and score a lot of points in a hurry. And it'd be a lot of fun to see, I think, 230 plus point performances at home against division rivals. It's a complete 180 from what we were seeing last year, where it was just nice to stay in a game rather than just blow out your opponent. So that have that an opportunity like that against the division rival, I think that's huge this Sunday. And you can't take it for granted, because if you get caught sleeping, these are professionals as well. And I would hate for them to be able to muster up a performance where they're able to kind of hit us in our jaw the same way we just did the Packers.
So I'm looking at the player stats for the Saints game last week. Rashid Shaheed was the number one receiver. He had 68 yards. He's no longer.
And I think
there.
Like six receptions too. Like it wasn't
correct.
Like,
or yeah, five receptions, 68 yards. Their leading rusher was Taysom Hill. He had 30 yards on four carries. Granted, they were in a pretty negative game script, so they had to throw more. Shuck only had 24 dropbacks though. Taysom Hill, four carries. Alvin Kamara, six carries. And both of them, well, Hill had an effective average, but Kamara, 14 yards on six carries. So I think we're going to see a lot of Tyler Shuck gimmick stuff. They love that stuff down in New Orleans. They're going to, as long as he's healthy. But I think this can be a very favorable game where when we're on the road in Lambeau against a much more talented team, even when we dominate, it's going to be a close game. I think if we take care of business in this game against a team where I think the Panthers have the talent advantage at almost every position, I think we should try to run up the score a little bit, do what we were talking about, get some more players involved. Even if we get down to the one, keep feeding Rico, give him some more touches, because he's like third in rush yards already, already has a career high in touchdowns. He could be looking at a 1,000-yard, 10-plus touchdown season if we give him the opportunity. So I wouldn't be mad at Rico Dowdle scoring more. But I think that's kind of all the major points that I wanted to hit on with the Saints. Do you have anything else?
No, I think we're good to roll in the perfect takes. And the one I have, so Bryce Young, since entering the league, I think leads the NFL in game-winning drives. I think he doesn't add to that tally this week in a win against New Orleans. So I think we're up in the fourth quarter. And if anything, the Saints are just trying to claw back to get into it. I do see this kind of being a grudge match, being kind of like a one possession game for a large portion of the game, and where we might pull away towards the end. But I do think we'll be in the driver's seat for the majority of Sunday. What about you, Jacob?
Yeah, I'm really, as much as I would love us to score 48 or whatever they did against us last year, I think it's going to be like a 24-14 kind of game. But with that in mind, I agree with you. I think the Panthers will win. And my take is that we're going to go two games above 500 this late in the season. So this will be week 10. So I'm not counting the 3-0 Matt Rule start. This late in the season will be two games above 500 for the first time since 2018. We were at that point, we were 6-4 going into week 10. We started that year 6-2. And I think if Bryce plays versus the Bills and Rico plays versus the Cardinals, we could be there. But I don't know. I think the bottom line is we're both predicting a victory this week.
Yeah, no, I think we're able to scrap our way to a victory on Sunday against the Saints. Like you said, that blowout loss, especially being Canales' first game as a head coach, that's something you remember. The last time you played in front of the home crowd, you had your like butt handed to you by the Bills. Like, I think there's enough where they aren't going to get caught lacking. But I do think this is going to be a physical matchup, because this is a division opponent. We've seen this throughout the years. Like the Panthers, when we went 15-1, it was like the division games were some of the closest games we played all year. And it was just because it's an element you can't account for, because these coaches see things like two times a year. So there are different wrinkles that are getting set up, and you sometimes catch your opponent when they aren't watching. So I think with a first year coaching staff with Kellen Moore, we have an advantage, and we've been great at home. So I think we lean into that. Any closing thoughts? Obviously, like you said, we will be at the game, which I think is exciting. We will have some great, great seats to view the game.
Yeah, going to be there. Hopefully it's a good one. I saw there might be rain, so I hope it doesn't rain. I did get a poncho or something. Today is the trade deadline, I guess I would say. The Panthers didn't make any trades, and I don't think we expected them to. It'd be nice, like, if they added, I don't know, somebody. But I think the way that Dan Morgan wants to build this team is through the draft. And if the future drafts are anything like the draft this year, I think we're going in the right direction. Even last year's draft, that has been hit or miss. Like, Trevon Wallace is coming along as the green dot. I think Leggett has a role as, like, a red zone threat. So there were some hits early. I think there are a lot of hits this year. So keeping our picks, I'm fine with that. But I think that's going to do it for us. Until next week, we'll, like you said, we'll be at the game, hopefully celebrating a win, singing Sweet Caroline at the end there. But until
they need to be playing the other banger. Like, what would you do with 150K? Like, come on. Like, come on. Like, that's got to be what you play.
The new Panthers anthem. Yeah, that'd be awesome if they got him like out there at halftime or something, or after the game. But I think we're a couple more wins away from that level. But hopefully we'll celebrate. We'll be back next Tuesday to talk about play the Falcons, I think, next week in 2 weeks from now in Atlanta. So that'll be a fun one to talk about. But until then, find us on Twitter, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your content. And for week 10 and hopefully another win, keep pounding.